If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
And I feel that's, people have a lot of pride in their work, but they also want to know that their voice is heard. And so we just create a very open, welcoming ground for people to express their opinions and make sure that they know the owners really care and want to make positive change.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ryan was the number one commodity derivative salesperson at Wall Street banks for 13 years. He transitioned to multifamily in 2019 and is a general partner in $50 million of assets and a passive investor in nearly 3,000 units across Texas, Ohio, and Florida, Phoenix, and Georgia. He launched Life Changing Capital, a Houston-based commercial real estate private equity firm, and takes an institutional, transparent, and hands-on approach to multifamily. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Sam, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, the pleasure's all mine. The pleasure's mine. That, you know, the same questions I ask everybody is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there? But for you, I mean, this has been a very short journey with some very rapid progress. Can you give one, talk a little bit about your commodities trading background, and then give us kind of just how you've scaled so fast?
Sure. So my background, I did my undergrad at Georgetown, my MBA at NYU, and then worked on Wall Street for 13 years. So, you know, was very used in the, particularly in commodities markets that are very fast paced. It was, you know, very work hard, intense type of work. And, you know, only took lunches with clients, you know, not, unfortunately not with colleagues, just because it was, we were kind of chained to our desk for trading hours. And so, you know, just used to high level of intensity and doing something for 13 years. You know, when I transitioned to multifamily, was looking for something that had sustainability and really kind of in the halftime point of my career and saying, what do I want to do for the next half? And for me, a lot of it was apprenticing my children and building a legacy for them and impacting people, kind of those two or three things. And so when I made the transition to multifamily, I said, everything that I know and that I've, you know, the training that I've gotten on the commodity side, I just want to apply that to multifamily. That's just part of my DNA now. And that's just how I think and that level of intensity. And so what that allowed me to do was to scale quickly, but also to scale profitably. Even more importantly is, you know, be in the right deals, partner with the right people and get to know, you know, the right vendors and the right brokers and be very picky choosy about the deals that we decided to enter into. We looked at 300 deals again, and just high level of intensity and bid on probably 30 to 40 of those and then were awarded three. So, you know, with that, we needed to figure out how do we screen these quickly? How do we, you know, just really plow through deals and be able to choose what we like, what we don't like, and find the ones that we thought were a good investment for our investors and for us to place capital.
I guess, you know, one, I'd love to just hear kind of how you picked your industry partners. I mean, because there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to know in the multifamily business. And maybe I'm wrong, but there's no amount of reading that can make up for experience. So how did you leverage other people's skill sets to really scale quickly?
Yeah, for sure. I think the number one, you know, I guess partner, and we can go through service providers as well. The most important thing for me was knowing that it takes a ton of effort. I mean, you're running a multi-million dollar business with a lot of moving parts and pieces and staff and so forth. And so the first thing was finding the right business partner. And for me, it was like, okay, I came from Wall Street. I want to apply that same approach to multifamily, just very institutional, transparent, hands-on approach. And I was looking for someone that also had that experience, that went to that same boot camp, if you will, and that had similar goals and similar values and work ethic. And so fortunately, I found, you know, my partner. And what we did is we grew organically. So we didn't decide to just partner up right away. We said, hey, let's just, you know, have a weekly call. And then it became, hey, check out my website. What do you think about it? What's your feedback? And then here's a deck I put together on my thesis for the space. I'd love your feedback on it. And, you know, here is a deal that I'm looking at. Love your thoughts on it. And then it was like, hey, we have a weekly call. Why don't we spend the summer building the rest of the quote unquote team. So who are we going to use for property management, and what insurance providers, what lenders do we like, and water conservation folks and so forth. And so, you know, legal folks. And that's when we really decided to partner together. And so it grew very organically. And then from that, that strong foundation of being on the same page and wanting the same things, and then the service providers, it became, you know, just joint decisions. You know, who do we like? You know, do we think this person's a good fit? And then we would talk with other folks in the space and just hear, no one's going to tell you they're a bad person, and no one's going to tell you I'm a bad service provider. So, you know, we would just figure out, okay, who's used them, and let's talk with them about their experiences and make our own decision about who we think would be the best fit for us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did. We just made sure that we would find the right people, partner with the right folks, and put them on the quote unquote team.
Right. And you guys have purchased, again, go back to your bio here, but Texas, Ohio, Florida, Phoenix, and Georgia. I mean, that's a lot of markets to really spread yourself across, because in each of those markets, you have to kind of rebuild that team, right? Your service providers are going to change per market.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So, you know, so I'm passively invested in all those markets. I'm a general partner in deals in the Texas Triangle and DFW, Houston, San Antonio, and then one deal in Georgia where I'm a general partner. So passively, I've just been a huge fan of diversification and across my non-real estate portfolio as well as my real estate portfolio. So the nice thing about passive investments, you can, you know, play into diverse markets.
Right, right. Man, that's super cool. So talk to us about the class of assets you guys selected, and then maybe tell us how you're able to vet, you know, deals quickly. Like, how did you develop that process?
Yeah, sure. You know, it was Class B and C assets. That's typically what we traffic in. I think over time, we want to continue to go upgrade in terms of newer vintage. You know, the properties that we acquired have been late 60s, 1979 vintage assets. And, you know, we're really looking for something in the 80s, just newer construction. And, you know, in terms of screening, I mean, the things that we look for and the similarities between the deals that we buy are just, you know, deals that have great curb appeal or the potential to have great curb appeal, and deals where there's an opportunity to increase rents and lower expenses. For instance, in our property in San Antonio, the first deal that we lead sponsored, and we've cut expenses 38% and revenue, rents have we've pushed 10%. So, you know, things like that where we can really control both dials, we like to see. Our assets tend to be located near schools or path of progress. So, you know, where there's one of our deals, there's a, you know, Walmart down the street, other assets, you know, there's schools right next door. And just, you know, if I feel proud to go there and I kind of have a kid test where I take my kids, and if they have a good feeling about it and they are like, hey, you know, I wouldn't mind living here. What that means to me is, you know, the next renter and the next buyer, potential buyers, you know, would equally like it. So that's something that we just find important in the deals that we acquire, is that we want them to be marketable so that we have liquidity to exit the deals, and we have, you know, liquidity in terms of if people leave, you know, renters don't renew, that we can find new potential renters to come in.
Sure, sure. How about the how you're vetting so many deals so quickly?
Yeah. So those are the things that we look for from a qualitative standpoint. And then quantitatively, we, you know, have a database of 300 deals. And so we really know our submarkets. And so we're very focused on the Texas Triangle. So anything in DFW, San Antonio, Houston, and we've just built a fair amount of, you know, comps, if you will. So, you know, one of the things we'll look at is, you know, off the bat, what are they asking for it? And what's the cap rate? What's the story behind it? Is there an opportunity to increase revenue, cut expenses? And then we'll just look at in Houston if it's in a flood zone or not. And, you know, are there problems there that we can fix? You know, if there's things where, you know, there's mold and mildew everywhere and the pipes break all the time, it's like, you know, it's just going to be a harder unless we're getting it at an extremely amazing basis. So, you know, those are some of the types of things that we look at. You know, we want to see decent school districts and, you know, have proximity to, you know, strong retail and just for a desirable place to live.
Right, right, right. No, I think that's amazing. That's amazing. 38% expense cut. Let's go back to that project. Sure. What did you guys do to cut expenses by 38% and yet retain, we'll call it, the same or better level of service to the tenant?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so, you know, this may sound crazy, but when we went there, it's 88 units. They had three staff. And when I walked into the units to do DD, and the residents would be like, come here. And they basically would crap on the maintenance staff. I mean, they were like, those guys never fix anything. Look at this. You know, it's horrible. I've been asking for months. And the maintenance guy was outside. And I realized, like, something's totally off here. You know, they have two folks, but they don't seem to be doing anything. And so what we ended up doing is we let one person go immediately upon takeover. We kept one just for continuity. And within a few months, we let that person go because we had hired someone. And actually, we like to test things. So we had a gentleman that was working on the weekends, helping us with rehabs. And, you know, we were just so impressed with his level of hustle and hunger. And we hired him to replace our old maintenance staff. And effectively, this guy is doing way more than both of those people put together. And, you know, we just got a message yesterday from a resident that just said, you know, I can open my phone and read it, but to the point of, you know, the maintenance, his name is Jorge, is so professional and he's so punctual and he gets things done. And, you know, I just love living here. And so that type of feedback is amazing. And so to go from three staff to two, and then one of the on-site manager, there was the same on-site manager they had before, but we just said, we're going to run things differently. You had a long-term 21-year-old, he owned the property for 21 years, lived in California, visited once a year. And we said, you know, we're just very hands-on. And so that person was able to adapt. And, you know, there's sometimes in life we can retrain people and there's sometimes where it's just not going to work out. So we had someone that we could retrain, the old maintenance guy we couldn't. And so just from, again, a commodities background, sometimes you're in a trade and it's not working out and you have to decide, is it going to get better or not? And you need to make a decision and move on very quickly before it gets worse. And so, you know, again, that's just how we apply our backgrounds to it. So that's one big area. We cut expenses. Then we cut expenses in just they were a lot of general and administrative costs, as well as just, you know, wasted maintenance supplies. You know, we're doing a lot of CapEx. So, you know, those things are now below the line. So that helps. But yeah, I would say those are the payroll was the biggest driver. And so that alone, you know, probably accounted for 60-70% of the expense reduction.
Wow. Wow. That's fantastic. So are you guys self-managing these or?
No, we aren't. But you know, what I like to say is we kind of quasi self-manage and we have to make sure our property management company is very in tune that, you know, we make the last call on staffing. And so we interview, you know, we say, you choose the candidates, that's your job, but we want to interview, you know, have that last interview and say yes or no to those candidates as well as, you know, direct access. So this morning, you know, I was chatting with our maintenance guy at that property because I was at Lowe's buying some things for a new property that we're acquiring. And, you know, was just asking him for his professional opinion. So we just like to have direct access to the staff as well as yesterday when there was some positive resident feedback, we can just congratulate, you know, the staff and, you know, having that open dialogue and they also where they feel, hey, I'm seeing this, this feels good or doesn't feel good on property. Here's some things we can do. We just want to be very receptive to that. And I feel that's people have a lot of pride in their work, but they also want to know that their voice is heard. And so we just create a very open, welcoming ground for people to express their opinions and make sure that they know the owners really care and want to make positive change.
Right, right. No, that's awesome. And I think that obviously allows you guys not just to raise rents, but also create stickier tenants.
Absolutely. And
overall, you know, better experience for everyone. So that's fantastic. One of the things you said earlier that I want to kind of circle back on is that you like to test things. You said that about the maintenance guy that you had coming on working over the weekend. So Jorge, I guess, was working over the weekends. You tested that out. Are there other things that you guys use that kind of test things approach on?
Yeah, particularly rehabs comes to mind is, you know, right downstairs now I've ordered a ton of different supplies for a new project that hopefully we're taking over this week. And there's four different types of chandeliers for the dining room. And so I want to put those in, do one in each type of upgrade, see what looks best, and then say, hey, this sticks, residents like it, let's go with this one. We did the same thing with trying to dial in, you know, paint colors as well as, you know, what level of upgrade do we want to standardize? And it took a while, but then what we realize is that this works across properties. And for instance, you know, we got 10% increases, rent increases, or more than that at our property in San Antonio. We did the same type of upgrade in Houston. We got $300 rent increases there from going from classic to premium. So just massive, massive rent increases. And that's what we plan to do at our new property that we're acquiring this week. So, you know, it's work. There's something just timeless about that upgrade. And, you know, that's something that we just take a lot of pride in and just delivering good product before we ask for rent increases.
Right. $300 a month rent increases.
Yeah.
Your investors should be happy with you.
We work really hard. I think that's one of the other things is kind of alluded to is we just work super hard to make deals perform and to do everything possible to, you know, push rents as hard as we can, but also deliver value. And, you know, we've all been to a restaurant where prices are high and quality's low and we just never go back, but we want to be, you know, very high quality, but also, you know, create some value on the price side where people say, you know, this is better than anything in the submarket, but we just have to make sure we do it cost effectively.
I love what you said about your finding your partner in the beginning kind of organically and how you guys kind of slow played that until it just made sense. Like, wait, we should just start a business. What about some other members on your team? Who else have you brought on board that is now kind of supporting staff or what you guys are doing?
Yeah. So we have a property management company where we started, you know, working with them on our first deal. And again, it was, we had spent a ton of time. My partner and I spent a lot of time with the founder of the company and they manage 25,000 units. So there was a lot of organic growth with them to really just make sure we would fit well. And then they did a great job on our first asset. We gave them some other assets to manage and so forth. And, you know, we just saw the people that they were hiring as they went into different regions were just high caliber, high quality people that were really open. I mean, our business model is a little bit different. You know, we're very much on the hands-on, direct access to staff, ask, you know, make sure that, you know, if something looks off, you know, we're going to be all over it in terms of, you know, financials and reports and just making sure that we're following up. And so some property managers, that's a lot. You know, there's folks that are on the spectrum of, you know, one of them we didn't even have a second conversation with, but they basically told us, we want you to think of this asset as the property management asset. It's not yours. And, you know, just fundamental disagreement as to how an asset should be run. And they said, we don't want you to just randomly show up. We want you to call us ahead of time, you know, plan it out. Don't talk to the staff. And we're just like, that's not us. You know, this is never going to work. You know, we just fundamentally feel that, you know, no one cares about your kids, your money. That was kind of before I got into apartments. And now it's your multifamily properties more than you do. And so that's something that I just can't shake. And that's just core to what we do.
Right. Ryan, I love this. This has been great. Let's jump here into the final four. First question is this. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Yeah. So if it's a passive investor, it's choose the deals that and the sponsors more importantly. I mean, 85% of your investment is the sponsors. So choose them wisely and carefully. And then if you are, you know, looking to partner with other people, you know, kind of some of the color I gave about choosing your partners and service providers carefully is super important.
Right. I love that. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
That's a tough question. You know, I think it's really just, it's networking. For me, it's you know, getting to know people and spending time with folks and just building that network.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
You know, I try to think about what can I do, you know, personally. And for me, it's just being the best person that I can, you know, treating people with respect. And for me, it's, I really look at the legacy that I'm leaving with my kids and the people around me and now these apartment communities. So being the best Ryan that I can be so I can make the most impact on the people that I touch.
Right, man, that's awesome. Ryan, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, for sure. Check out my website. It's called lifechangingcapital.com. And there's opportunity if you need to book some time or chat or read some of the articles and videos that we've put together.
That's awesome, man. Ryan, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.